multi-instrumentalist, Xavier plays guitars, tongue drums, stomp boxes, djembes, harmonica, ankle bells, and slide banjo. His songs speak of compassion, humanity, spirituality, the Aboriginal peoples of his native land, Australia, and the environment. A folk festival favourite and hugely popular in Canada, Xavier packs in armies of the faithful at his amazing shows. Don't miss Xavier Rudd live at the Queen Elizabeth Theatre on Friday, February 22nd, brought to you by Live Nation and CITR 101.9 FM.
And in these times when paranoia closes in, power and hate are rampaging disease.
Hello and welcome to Arts Express here on CITR 101.9. I'm your host, Katie Fitzpatrick. A bit later on in the show today, we're going to have an interview with Maura Halloran and Kate Hilderman, who are both members of the UBC Theatre Department, and they're starring in their new production called The Learned Ladies. And we're going to be talking to them a little bit about their show, as well as what it's like to be an aspiring actor in the UBC Theatre Program and in Vancouver. And we're also going to be hearing a review near the end of the show of that show, The Learned Ladies, by arts volunteer Tracy Fuller, who always does great reviews for us. Now, I'm also going to be letting you know about a few events that are coming up this week and happening this week. And one of those at UBC here is UBC Pride presents the Out Week at UBC. So last night they had a comedy thing, which I don't know if any of you got a chance to check out. Obviously, it's a bit late to go to that now since it happened last night. But there's more events coming up throughout the rest of the week. Tonight, from 7 to 9 p.m. at UBC Robson Square, there's an Out Loud reading series. It's organized by the Pride UBC grad rep, Dave DeVoe. And it features local queer authors such as Michael V. Smith, Matt Bach, Michelle Miller, Colin Thomas, and performer Cameron McKenzie. Now, also in the arts sort of field, they're having a film screening tomorrow night called She's a Boy I Knew, and that's going to be at the Norm Theatre here in the Sub. It's at 7 p.m., and it's going to also feature a question-and-answer discussion with director Gwen Haworth. Out Week is pleased to present Gwen Haworth's award-winning documentary, She's a Boy I Knew, and she's going to be attending the screen and hosting a Q&A discussion afterwards. She's a UBC film graduate, and She's a Boy I Knew is actually her MFA thesis. So link to UBC as well as Out Week discussion and a film, so always an interesting sort of thing to check out. Also part of the movie things going on with the Pride Out Week is Movie Night at Place Vanier, which is that's from 7 to 9 p.m. On Thursday, February 14th, Valentine's Day, and they're going to be showing a screening of the film Short Bus, which I think I saw maybe 6 months ago or something. It's a really good film. I mean, it definitely puts a lot of issues of sexuality out there, which is why it's part of this this week, but I would say it deals with a lot of other issues as well, just a good film on the whole. Now, this one isn't as related to the arts, but I think it's really interesting anyway for anyone who enjoys a good discussion, and for myself personally, because I'm a potential world religions major. So that is on Friday, February 15th. It's from 2 to 4 p.m. It's at the Vancouver School of Theology, and it's a talk on religion and sexuality. So it's been organized by the Vancouver School of Theology master's student Jeffrey Priest, and it will be held, it will feature guest speakers Reverend Dr. Wendy Fletcher and Anita Fast, as well as Jeffrey. So Jeffrey Priest will be presenting on the subject of queering God, experiencing the non-normative divine. And Dr. Reverend Wendy Fletcher presents Struggling Over Sex in a Dividing Church, and Anita Fast presents Queered by the Bible. So really interesting subject matter, I would say. Probably really worth checking out. Once again, that's Friday, February 15th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Vancouver School of Theology. And again, not so arts related, but if you're going to check out some of the other events, you probably want to go to their party as well, which is happening on Friday night in the GSS ballroom. So that's what's going on this week with Pride Week here at UBC. Now, there's a lot of other stuff obviously going on in the city as well. You know, we were talking a little bit about some of the films that they're showing. There's some other good films coming out right now as well. Well, actually, I'll take that back. There's not a lot of good films coming out right now because the Oscars are coming up, and with the way that short-term memory works, most of the movies tend to come out a little bit earlier on, whereas now any movie that comes out is going to be for next year's Oscars, so they're not a lot of them coming out now. They want to wait till closer to the date of next year's. However, Fifth Avenue Cinemas is finding an interesting solution to this, I think. They're putting on the five films that are the five Oscar nominees this year. So they're showing There Will Be Blood, which I reviewed I believe last week and said that it was excellent. They're also showing Juno, which I reviewed maybe a month or so ago. I said that it was fun, but I personally didn't think it was good enough to make it into this nominee category, but there you go. I guess the Academy makes these decisions, not me. And the other ones that they're showing are Michael Clayton, No Country for Old Men, and Atonement. Those are all on at Fifth Avenue right now. So again, if you like movies and you like discussions, this might be something you want to go check out, see what movies you haven't seen yet, maybe with a friend or something, and talk about which ones you like the best. I know I've only seen two of them, which I'm ashamed of since I do reviews here on this show, so I'm going to try to be checking out the other three in the coming weeks so I can maybe put my two cents into this this debate as well. Now, furthermore, if you're interested in literary events, there's, as I mentioned, there's the Out Loud Reading Series, which is happening tonight. Another interesting literary event coming up is called F Off and Die, except with the harsher language, Tales in Teen Angst Poetry. Sarah Benoy shares the best of the worst poems she has gathered in her 8 years of seeking out truly awful teen angst poetry. Now, I first found out about this teen angst poetry club or night or whatever way back in grade 12, I think, and I started going to it, and even though I was only a couple years out of my own angsty teenage poetry phase, I found it hilarious. People come and, you know, share the poetry that they have recently found under their bed or in their drawers, their really bad teenage poetry, all the angsty problems that they were dealing with that seem so ridiculous nowadays, and everyone gathers and reads them together, and it's a really great time. Now, that's happening February 16th at 8 p.m. at the Tawasin Arts Center, but I believe they have another show on March 11th, which is probably in Vancouver, and hopefully we're going to have them on the show here on Arts Express on March 11th to read some poems and talk about this sort of ironic poetry night that they've been organizing for years now. Another event going on right now, if you missed the comedy night last night with Outweek, there's a new comedy group in Vancouver called Grimaldi's Asylum, and they have a little bit of an interesting background story to them. In their 1920s, there was a world-famous clown named Grimaldi. Legend and lore recounts that he was a comic genius. He allegedly could make crowds roar with laughter for hours on end without uttering a single word or moving a muscle. The legend also tells us that years of performing in makeup drove him insane and into depression. Grimaldi, feeling empty despite the joy he was giving to others, went to a psychiatrist. The therapist, upon hearing depression was the ailment, suggested, "You should go see Grimaldi." The patient simply replied, "I am Grimaldi." He hung himself the very next day. Now, I don't know if this story is true, but this is what Grimaldi's Asylum puts on their website. Maybe gives them a little taste of their humor, which apparently is a little bit dark. Now, this group is called Grimaldi's Asylum. They're a group of lunatics, they say. They were locked in the prison of Grimaldi's mind, and so they've come out to get some comedy from this. And they mentioned that, by the way, they're effing hysterical. Now, they sent me a whole big press packet about their new comedy group, and it included a little bottle of candies that were, you know, fake medicine pills and these little fake doctor's notes as VIP passes and everything. So they're really working this new theme, putting this new group out. And if you want to go check them out, they're going to be at the Tom Lee Theater from February 8th to April 5th, doing four shows a week from 7 to 8 and from 9 to 10 on Friday and Saturday nights. It's $12. That's, once again, at the Tom Lee Theater on Granville Street, Friday and Saturday nights, Grimaldi's Asylum. Now, as I mentioned, we're also going to be doing an interview in just a couple minutes here, actually, with Maura Halloran and Kate Hilderman from the UBC Theatre Department. So we'll be coming to back to do that just after this.
This is rated R for...
Really Awesome.
Did you know that you can now download all CITR radio shows off their website?
What?
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 What a coincidence. So are we. And with this new podcasting feature, all you have to do is log on to www.citr.ca/podcast to find a massive library of really awesome stuff.
Sponsored by the UBC Bookstore.
Hi, this is Mick from Bell and Sebastian, and you're listening to DITR 101.9 FM.
All right, so here we are back on Arts Express, and we're talking today with Maura Halloran and Kate Hilderman from the UBC Theatre Department, and they've got a new show on right now called The Learned Ladies, and so we're going to be asking a few questions about that and a few questions about what it's like to be part of the theatre program. So first of all, ladies, I looked at the website, and it was talking about how Molière's wicked social satire mirrors public and private morality as precisely today as in the 1600s. How is this so?
I think nowadays we talk a lot about family psychology and dysfunctional families, and I think that is essentially what's at the core of this play, is a dysfunctional family or a family where things are not operating in the way that we traditionally expect families to operate and the way we expect people to treat each other, and and there's a lot of concern about public image within the family.
Right.
And so I think it's mocking that bourgeois
concern about
for parents to be concerned about the image that they're projecting of the family and the image of their children and about wealth and and public persona. So I think...
Yeah, and I think one, something that's interesting about the show is the power struggle between the sort of matriarch and her weak husband. It's very interesting because this day and age we talk a lot about women versus men's role in the household and how that's shifting constantly, and there's never sort of a clear picture of what a household is supposed to look like with who's sort of wearing the pants in the family. Mm-hmm. And I think this is, it's really interesting in this show because it's all about that. It's about the shifting power between a woman and a man and who should be in control of their family and sort of how to find that the balance between parents and between different people in the family. So it's quite interesting.
Yeah, I think it's very much the same political dynamic you'd see in the average TV sitcom nowadays.
Right, but yeah.
It's from the 1600s.
So, yeah, it's interesting. And I talked to two, you guys sort of touched on this a bit, but saying that it advances the rationale of early feminists and unmasks their folly. So how does it do both those things?
Well, I don't know if these women would really call themselves feminists.
Right. But so you're not okay with the description, maybe?
No, I think the description is fair enough, but I think in saying that it's a folly... They're fighting for the rights of women to be learned scholars, but I think the folly in that is that they've only applied it to women, and maybe that's in the way in which their so-called feminism is slightly stunted, is that they've taken particular traits and decided they only apply to women, or only women should have the right to do that. They've decided to have a salon in their house where they're just going to judge
other people's works, yeah. And only themselves and their friends will have wit, is actually part of what they say. It's quite, yeah, it's funny. I mean, I understand why it says folly, but I think a lot of the feminist ideas in the play are quite advanced for the time of the show, and just the idea that women can be learned if they please is something that Molière was not afraid to say, which is interesting. But he also showed, you know, how, as Maura was saying, the folly is that they only apply it to themselves and that they don't sort of seek for a even playing ground. They sort of just seek to be the dominators on the field.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're not really looking for a universal libertarianism or egalitarianism. They're applying it to themselves.
Yeah, right. It's a little kind of narrow-minded pursuit. In their sort of ambition. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, I know, Kate, you said you had something to say about this. It says, sharply satiric commentary on literary pretension. And I know I'm an art student, and sometimes you deal with literary pretension a lot in classes. So how is this satirizing on that?
Well, yeah, I'm an English lit minor, and I find this a lot in my classes. Just the idea that because you've read so many novels or so many books and you've studied Plato and all these different things, that you have this pretension that you sort of carry around. And I think even at UBC there's a lot of students that carry this pretension. And I think you can read as many books as you want, but if you don't understand the core of them or don't use them sort of to advance yourself, it's just kind of it's wasted, and it's more of just a showpiece,
right.
as this show really paints it. It's a showpiece, and it's a great conversation you can have with someone because you've read, you know, The Republic or something. So it's funny, and especially for my character in the show, she's not very intelligent, and she really doesn't understand the things she's reading, but yet she has read them so she can use the name. She knows who Epicurus is, you know. She can state all these different things about seeing men in the moon and things like that, but she actually doesn't understand anything she's saying, which I think happens a lot here at UBC.
Right, yeah, fair enough.
I think that Molière is satirizing the whole concept of literary criticism that a lot of theater people have to deal with, what gets said about the work is far more important than what's actually
in the work
and how good the work actually is gets superseded by what critics want to say about it. And
right.
Our characters in particular are far more interested in what they have to say about the poetry that they're hearing than what's actually going on in
or
the
what
poetry.
The author's
they're
trying
far
to actually
more interested
present.
In the parts that in speaking about the poetry. So the criticism aspect becomes far supersedes the artistic work itself.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that was something Molière was definitely going after was the pretension of literary critics. That
he was concerned that people were doing that with his own works
yeah.
as well.
Especially.
That what they had to say was more important than what the artist had to say in the first place.
Right, okay. That's interesting. Now, a little turning the attention more to being, you know, a UBC theater student and everything. Now, right now you're being directed by an MFA student, right? And sometimes you're directed by, is it professors or... professional directors?
Yeah, I mean, it changes every time. The last show Maura and I did together was The Red Sisters, which was directed by Jonna Wright, and she's a professional director from Vancouver.
Artistic director.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she came in specially for the project just because they wanted a new take on it, someone from outside the program to come in, and just to give us the opportunity to work with someone who's so well-established and so well-known in Vancouver. At other times, the show before that we did was A Midsummer's Night Dream, and it was taught by Stephen Heatley, who is one of our professors.
Right.
So it changes every time, and there are two MFA thesis projects because they're two MFA students, and this one's directed by Patrick Gauthier, and it's basically his thesis for the last two works of his master's. This is the final show, and so it's interesting to each sort of scenario working with your teachers who you've known and had in classwork, a professional director who you've never met before you start the show,
mm-hmm.
and then a fellow student who comes to it sort of at a different angle, but is just...
How so? Different angle?
Well, I mean, to be fair, to get into the MFA directing program, you have to have previous experience mm-hmm. as a director.
Right, I noticed that he has a lot, actually. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So Patrick and the other MFA student, David, both have quite a bit of experience working professionally in theater.
It's not like they're beginners to it
no,
or something
yeah,
like that.
It's not like they're striking about in the dark. But I think part of the process for them is a learning process where they have the option... to explore more than they would normally be able to do. They have a longer rehearsal period. They have access to a costume shop, a scene shop. They work with the MFA designers. So it's much more of an open process where they can explore more than you would normally be able to do under the restrictions of a professional circumstance where mm-hmm. it's all about the bottom line and getting the show up.
Yeah.
Right.
They
okay.
don't have to
so it's more
actors.
Like a process of learning and growing and
yeah.
things like that
mm-hmm.
are
yeah.
more focused
and
on.
And they can work with us we played a lot of games in rehearsal.
Yeah.
We did a lot more table work than mm-hmm. We might normally have done, going over the script a lot.
Right.
The sort of thing that you don't normally have time to do mm-hmm. in the professional world.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
you sort
learning
of get
about
to...
their own process as directors through that.
And they sort of allow you to play a more creative role as an actor in these sort of circumstances because you're sort of all figuring it out together and you're doing this really interesting exploration of the text, as Maura said, with lots of table work and of the different aspects of the show together. So you form sort of a more of a collective. It's a much more of a sort of family group dynamic that's going on. It's very interesting. It's a really great way to work in because you all sort of get to explore the things you want to together and... I think in the end it produces a really interesting show.
Yeah, I think with this experience in particular, that was what Patrick was looking to set up, and that was the way he wanted to work, was for us all to bring things to the table and work more collaboratively.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was just in charge of the final vision and the final edits of saying,
right, okay,
yes, that boner joke can go in here and
you
not
can,
there.
Yeah, you can carry that wine glass for the entire
yeah.
play.
It's funny to fall off the sofa, but keep your dress down.
Yeah.
Right, okay, yeah, fair enough. Make the final calls in those
yeah.
departments. Now, you told me that you don't get really, the students don't get any choice really in what plays get presented during the season. So who is it that decides and how do you feel about the plays that they chose this season?
There's a committee that decides over at the department, somewhere up in the ivory tower.
Yes,
right.
The MFA design, the MFA directing students submit proposals for what shows they want to do. I think they have to submit five.
Five choices.
And mark which ones are their top three sort
right.
of thing, and then those two projects are decided from there. They usually choose for the second year and first and third year class, the senior students. They'll have a dedicated show for that class, so
right.
it's just the class that's involved in that. So that makes it part of the season. There's usually a co-pro, Mm-hmm. And that comes out of a collaboration with a professional theater company.
Right.
And then this year they also added Res Sisters, where they brought in a professional director for a specific project.
Hmm.
And then there's other things in the season which are not student involved or may have some student volunteers, but are essentially in the same space, but not produced by Theater UBC.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you were happy with the choices that they make generally? Do you ever feel like, oh, I really wish we'd do something totally different or something like that?
I think there is a sort of UBC Theater guideline for what kind of shows are produced here, and there's sort of a standard for what I think that they're mm-hmm. doing. But over the 4 years that I've been here in the theater that I've seen and done, I think a lot of that's changing now, and they're taking more chances. I mean, we did Midsummer's Night Dream, which is obviously done a lot, but they wanted to take a new vision on it and thought it would be a great show for our dedicated show for the final years. And it turned out to be a really interesting project, much different than a lot of people were expecting. And,
mm-hmm. and I mean, yeah, I saw Red Sisters, one as well. It was different take on it, for
different
sure.
Different take, yeah. For sure. And Red Sisters, I mean, was a big sort of gamble, I think, when they were probably first thinking about it. Weren't sure if it was... It was very controversial to be doing that piece of theater here, so that was interesting that they went for that, and it was sort of inspiring that they're taking chances now, and they're sort of going outside of the canon of UBC traditional theater, and creating this more interesting season. I think every year it gets more and more interesting.
I think because they try to choose large cast productions to give the acting students a chance to get out on the stage, and also because we have a design program here, they do tend to choose. I mean, there's not that many large cast productions,
right?
In the
canon.
Have
to meet those practical needs as well.
So they have to meet that practical need, but they do tend to take a more challenging take on it.
That's good.
And a less commercial sort of people pleasing way of doing things because that's what the directors are here to do is challenge expectations, and that's what the designers want to do. And we have the facilities here. We have the costume shop and the scene shop and
amazing theaters, numerous venues.
We have the spaces and the support for people to do those things and try those experiments. So every once in a while, it feels like we're at the mercy of the student designers.
Right.
But in terms of the shows they choose for the season, I think they do a really great job of choosing exciting material for the university setting.
Okay, the last thing I want to talk about today is what is it like being an aspiring actor in Vancouver? What do you think of some of the challenges? Do you plan to stay here? What are some of the opportunities?
Well, I think the biggest challenge is everyone in Vancouver is an actor.
Right. So. Okay.
Yeah. It's a theater town. Yeah.
It's a huge. It doesn't have a huge theater scene per capita compared to other big cities.
Yeah.
But I think that's exciting for us coming out as emerging artists that there's still space here to build your own things. And I think most of us intend to do that once we get out of school, is to make our own stuff. And I mean the competition is pretty stiff to get agents and to get attention and all that sort of thing. But for those of us who want to do theater, and I think Kate and I both fall into that category, I think that the program sets us up quite well.
So the competition's more if you're trying to do film and TV than it is with theater, would you say?
Or the competition is pretty stiff.
Both
are. Stiff too, yeah.
Okay.
It's difficult for both, but I completely agree with Maura in the fact that I think both of us are really interested in creating our own pieces, both writing and producing and directing and just working with other people that we've met so far along the way. And that's what's exciting, because in Vancouver you can do that. It is a smaller city. I mean, it seems huge, but it's not Toronto, and it has smaller spaces that you can have the opportunity to create your own theater in, and that's the exciting thing, and that's why I chose to move here, and I choose to stay.
Yeah.
Because of those opportunities. And
I know there's the group 20-something Productions, just some younger actors and actresses got together, and they do small shows at the Beaumont Studios and things like that, and, you know, there's room for that sort of thing. I guess that's what you're saying.
Yeah, and
saying,
it's got a collaborative spirit, as well, because it's more of a scene that's still trying to find itself a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as structured and as strict and cliquey.
You don't have to fit into a certain category
as other theater scenes. Yeah, you don't have to. You can explore and be a little more deconstructionist with your projects, and that's sort of embraced here.
Great.
In a way that it isn't as much maybe in the East Coast scenes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, thanks so much for talking today. And the show is until February 16th, right?
Yep.
And it's at the Frederiquet Theater?
Mm-hmm.
8 p.m.?
7:30.
7:30. Okay, good. Glad I checked that then. All right. Thanks very much.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks,
so that's our interview with Maura Halloran and Kate Hilderman from the UBC Theater Department. So make sure you go check out The Learned Ladies. And we're actually going to have a review of that in 1 or 2 minutes here. So you'll get a little more of a scoop on what we're seeing at that production. Now, before we go today, I'm also going to give you a few more listings of some other things that are going on. One is The Three Sisters. Presentation House Theater presents Anton Chekhov's classic drama about a provincial Russian family that longs to return to Moscow. That's still March 1st at the Presentation House Theater. The Dark Between. Craning Neck Theatre presents a new play by Jeremy Waller based on the life and work of Canadian poet Pat Lowther. That's till February 16th at the Beaumont Studios. Nice, quiet little theatre that often has some great productions. Finally, at the Vancouver East Cultural Centre, there's the Satchmo Suite. Eastern Front Theatre presents Hans Bogild and Doug Innes' musical play about a modern-day classic cellist who has a special relationship with the late jazz great Louis Armstrong. Once again, that's till February 16th at the Vancouver East Cultural Centre. And if you're one of the types who likes to go see everything that comes out of the Vancouver Art Gallery, which I'm becoming more and more, I've noticed, then you may want to check out the new one that opened on Saturday. It's Kulag Ataman's Paris and Cuba. In his newly commissioned video installation, Kulag Ataman offers a remarkable portrait of 24 Southern Californians who describe their encounter with that place they call paradise. For the first time, paradise will be paired with Ataman's 2004 Carnegie Prize-winning video installation entitled Cuba, an equally powerful portrait of another utopian community, this one situated on the outskirts of Istanbul. Beautiful city, by the way, if you ever get a chance to go there. Now, without further ado, we'll get to our review of The Learned Ladies by Arts Volunteer Tracy Fuller, and then we'll come back for a couple little closing remarks here on Arts Express.
Learned lovers, look no further. The appropriate Valentine's Day gift is waiting for you on campus this year. Theater at UBC has made it easy for you all by running Molière's classic comedy, The Learned Ladies, at the Friedrichwood Playhouse every day this week. Because what could be more romantic than a night at the theater? Indulging your loved one in the farcical French masterpiece will make you look like a theatrical connoisseur, even those of you who think Ibsen is a guitar and Bard on the Beach is a nudist colony. It will also set the stage for whatever desserts, gastronomical or physical, you have planned for Cupid's Night, especially if you're the kind of couple that likes a little bit of controversy. The witty weapon Molière brandishes in The Learned Ladies cuts a fine line between reason and ridicule. The women portrayed devote themselves entirely to higher learning, which is an early step in the right direction, but their efforts are shown to be misdirected and foolishly frenzied, which leaves them looking idiotic and absurd. The premise makes for good slapstick comedy, but it does nothing for the women's lib movement. Fortunately for the contemporary crowd, Molière's men appear equally as ridiculous and deserve no more respect than their frantic female counterparts. Everyone in the audience can laugh their way through this production, knowing that all the characters are imbeciles, regardless of their gender. Despite Molière's quoted intention to correct the vices of men by entertaining them, you can rest assured knowing that there is no heady moral to be taken away from this play. The program provides enough historical and dramaturgical information to satisfy the curious, but for the average theatergoer, MFA candidate Patrick Gauthier's excellent direction offers enough context, both verbal and visual, to satisfy anyone concerned about comprehending this antiquated piece of theater. Even if you miss the gist of the play, watching it is a pleasure in and of itself, thanks to MFA costume designer Carmen Alatoure. The cast of 11 characters prance beneath the proscenium arch in technicolor garbs that grab the eye and excite the imagination. Tailored to reflect the high society splendor that characterized the French court in 1672, the bodices, blazers, and bouffants are elegant and vibrant, giving an updated pizzazz to costumes that would otherwise be a collection of mundane meringues. When the four main actresses meet on stage, a beautiful bouquet of personified primary colors seems to bloom. When all the play's characters appear, it's as though a kindergartner's color palette has exploded on stage. As has been the case all season for theater at UBC, the cast of characters does a terrific job with this play, both individually and as an ensemble. On the heels of The Rez Sisters, which featured only female students, The Learned Ladies gives the male MFA and BFA actors a chance to shine. Gord Myron, cast as the father and husband Frisdale, plays the whipped patriarch to perfection. Both Nick Fontaine and Aslam Hussein, as Tressotin and Clitandre, respectively, portray the right mix of arrogance with enough ego on the one hand and romance on the other to make sparks fly when the two exchange rhetorical blows on stage. Although the two-act play is set in the late 17th century and has been translated from French into English rhyming prose, The plot moves swiftly and the repartee remains lively throughout. As the script itself proclaims, in short, the quatrains are a great success. With a crowd-pleasing plot twist at the end of the play, the learned ladies will release you and your loved one merrily into the evening well before 10 p.m. This will give you plenty of time to delve more deeply into the play's main themes, which of course are love, passion, and poetry. Cupid's academic aim is spot on this year, and if you're witty and wise, you'll catch a couplet or two with Molière and theater at UBC at the Friedrich Wood Theater this week. For the arts, I'm Tracy Fuller.
As always, a very well-written and poetic review by Tracy Fuller recommending this production, especially as a Valentine's Day date, it sounds like. So we're wrapping up here on Arts Express today. Once again, I'm Katie Fitzpatrick, your host here on CITR 101.9, wishing you all a happy Valentine's Day or anti-Valentine's Day or happy February 14th, depending on what approach you want to take to it. Be sure to tune in the next coming up weeks. We're going to have an interview with the director of Arts Club's Bombay Black, which is opening up on, I believe, February 26th. And we're also going to have some storytelling and some teenage poetry and all kinds of exciting stuff going on the show. Now, please stay tuned for Robert Waldman's Reel to Reel if you want to learn a little bit more of the movies and get a little more even prepared for the Oscars, although I already mentioned you can go check out all the nominees at Fifth Avenue Cinemas. Okay, thanks again, and tune in next week here on Arts Express, Tuesdays at 2 o'clock or on podcasts at www.citr.ca.
A long time ago, in a city far, far away,
CITR
was born. In the decade ahead, America will be in space.
CITR
is already there. Astronaut Neil Armstrong had this to say about
CITR.
It's one small step for man.
CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Herbert R. Tarlick, Chairman.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Reel to Reel at the Movies. Robert Waldman reporting. Back in action. Lots of new movies to talk about today, plus a few holdovers. Just want to begin by telling you a little bit about a theater that we don't really give too much coverage to. That's the Van City Theater. Now, this theater was actually built by Van City. It's a credit union, we all know. And I guess they're, you know, perhaps a little bit different than banks. But the Vancouver International Film Festival has its headquarters at the Van City Theater. And over the year, they provide lots of good alternative entertainment. For example, they have a lot of film festival fare. They have a lot of foreign movies. They have a lot of documentaries. They have a lot of movies that don't normally get into mainstream theaters. For example, recently they just wrapped up the Science Fiction Festival. And if you like seeing classy movies on the big screen, for example, they have movies like Tron, The Matrix, and Raiders of the Lost Ark, plus Jurassic Park, plus 2001 A Space Odyssey, not to mention Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Jason and the Argonauts, Blade Runner, The Final Cut, and the classic King Kong. Well, it's too bad that we couldn't have talked about those movies, but I will tell you that coming up right in the immediate future at